Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone.
Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas.
Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat Cold Tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500. Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Today's cool fact of the day is that if you are an average person and we were to turn you into soap, you'd be good for about 7 full-size bars of soap. Yeah, that's gross, but, well, you don't have that much fat on you. However, I imagine if you are an average American eating a standard American diet, you probably have enough fat to make like 27 bars of soap. But I don't have any actual evidence of that other than rampant obesity rates.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of 6 different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
You're listening to Podcast 51. Natasha Vita Moore, PhD, is an American designer and theorist. She's co-editor and author of The Transhumanist Reader, Classical and Contemporary Essays on the Science, Technology, and Philosophy of the Human Future. And she's also the author of Primo Posthuman, which is a pioneering future whole-body prototype. She's a professor at the University of Advancing Technology, a fellow at the Institute of Ethics and Emerging Technologies, and she's chairman of the board at Humanity Plus. Now, for listeners of the podcast who haven't come across this sort of thing before, it's pretty remarkable. Humanity Plus is the magazine and sort of the institute around the transhumanism movement. The transhumanist movement is something we're going to talk about today, and I'm actually going to ask Natasha in my first question what it is, and it's something I've been following for, oh good God, nearly a decade now. So Natasha, please tell us what this is and welcome to the show. I'm so excited, and I think a lot of our readers or listeners have never heard of transhumanism, so you're going to be breaking new ground here.
Oh, superb. Great. I love it. As long as I don't make a sinkhole.
You won't do that.
transhumanism is a worldview that started actually as a codified philosophy in the early 1990s when Dr. Max Moore wrote The Philosophy. But it stems from a broad range of perspectives about human evolution, the human condition, ethics about human enhancement, looking at the emerging and speculative technologies that are intervening with biology and extending our lives and also making our lives more wonderful, more joyous, more focused, our consciousness more aware, our intellection smarter, our health basically is the primary aspect of it, to bring about better health and understanding. The term transhuman means a transhuman in transition. So the human biology, as far as a transhuman is concerned, would mean that the merging with technology more and more. It differs from the concept of the cyborg in that the cyborg is a machine augmentation to the human biology developed by Manfred Kleins and Nathan Klein back in the days of cybernetics when we were thinking about going out into space, knowing that our biology just could not exist in space due to solar rays and zero G on the bone structure of the body. However, the transhuman is steering its own evolution, so it's a totally different concept. It's about the human in becoming something other than solely or totally biological. It's a self-directed evolution. A movement that your readers or your listeners, I should say, will know a lot about is Quantified Self, which was developed by Kevin Kelly, the brain person behind Wired Magazine. Quantified Self is about technology and humans, and people come together at meetups all over the world and talk about taking responsibility for their lives. That is extremely transhumanist in scope, so I hope that narrows it down to the issue of self-responsibility. We're alive now, let's protect it, and let's see how long we can live.
So if I was to translate that, you were born inside a science fiction novel and you never came out of it? Like, how much of this?
Interestingly enough, I have hardly read science fiction.
Really? That shocks me. I, by the way, I love everything you were just saying, but I know for a lot of people who are driving, listening to this right now, that their eyes could be crossing already. So what you're saying, if I was to try and play it back to you in one sentence, is that the human evolution itself of the biological organism is something that we should take control of versus something we should just replace, which would be the idea of, you know, becoming a cyborg.
I think so. Okay. Now, of course, with the transhuman concept, as far as human enhancement is concerned, we are replacing body parts. More people walk around today with transplants and implants and prosthetic limbs. And we're going to be seeing more and more of that happening and refined, being designed by basically engineers with an aesthetic sensibility so that it will be personalized prosthetics. So again, the cyborg is just augmenting the body with machines. The transhuman is a self-directed evolution. To remain solely biological, we really can't extend the human lifespan unless we intervene with genetic engineering, isolating what causes aging and reversing it or, you know, stopping it to the largest degree. But the bottom line is our biology is extremely fragile. And no matter how much we exercise or eat healthy food and meditate, live a joyous, healthy life, surround ourselves with positive people, we still can get disease. And if we have injury, if we're in a car accident, for example, we suffer and possibly die. So the issue here is, how do we prevent this onslaught of death so early in our lifespans? You think about it, 122 years is not that long to be alive in one life, in, you know, one existence. So we'd like to push that a little bit further and create healthier lives for a longer period of time. In a nutshell, that's it.
The work that I've been doing for the past decade or so at the Silicon Valley Health Institute is all around anti-aging. And it's very much, how do we push our existing hardware, the body, as far as it'll go? And I appreciate the work you're doing, just saying, well, all right, it's only going to go so far. And what do we do after that? Which is obviously the next step in anti-aging. But what do you think that the human body is going to look like in just 10 years? How fast is this going to happen to us?
You know, we always think things happen faster than they do, and there are many futurists who make predictions. I'm not one who does that. I am more of a theoretician and a designer. So I look at what's possible. I look at the world as far as systems thinking, much like Buckminster Fuller, and looking at what works together, where the variables are, what we can do now to help self-direct possible scenarios. And there's not just one future, there is multiple options for futures. And it all depends on the decisions we make about our lives as individuals and society. But if we take a look at where we would be 10 years from now, certainly the trends show that we'll be enhancing the body more and more with devices that are external, a smartphone, an Android, an iOS, applications that we download perpetually, communication that is 24/7 and all the different social media formats that we have. But I think more importantly than that aspect of it is learning about our DNA. There is an organization called 23andMe where we can have our DNA identified for, I think it's $99 still. I had mine done, I think, a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, I'm not sure. But we can find out what diseases we have a propensity for based on our genetic makeup. So that's something important to know so we can start living our lives with an awareness of that. Other things we can do, of course, as you know, and you're an advocate of this, exercise. I spend 5 to 7 days a week in the gym, but I also relax a lot and party a lot. So it's got to be fun. I eat healthy. I have a semi-paleo diet. I like your idea for your morning coffee. I haven't tried it yet, but I'm really looking forward to doing. I'm going to try it probably, hopefully, tomorrow.
I know that the beans are at the Singularity Institute. There's a lot of people there who are into Bulletproof Coffee. So if you want a bag, we'll send them to you.
The Singularity Institute is no longer in existence.
Oh, sorry. I used the wrong name. What's it called now?
Singularity University.
Sorry.
no, that's a big difference.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm an advisor to the track, the ethics track, the Singularity University, and I hope to be there in August for their events. But I like the idea of this coffee that we put butter in that does provide some level of protein. And the issue here is getting healthy food, preparing our food in a healthy way, and mastication, not masturbation, mastication. So when you eat your food, make sure that you take time to chew it so that the your saliva can get the elements out of the food, the nutritious elements, and help your digestive tract absorb them. Otherwise, you're just putting food in, goes in one end, out the other. We have to make sure the food is healthy and we take our time eating it. Other practices for life extension, of course, I believe very strongly in transcendental meditation. I've been doing it since I was 18 years old. Yoga, I studied yoga with Bikram in Beverly Hills, I should say, for 3.5 years at his studio with Bikram. And you know, Bikram yoga is become major. It's very difficult. It's more like gymnastics than spiritual yoga. But these are things that we can be doing on a daily basis. The issue that you mentioned about where are we going in the future, what is the body going to become? The body is going to become more of a self-directed, self-responsible vehicle for our existence, for our consciousness and awareness, of course. I think that we're going to be looking more deeply inside the body and identifying diseases earlier. I think that's one of the major trends in identifying our lifespan and our health level, being aware. We have apps on our smartphones. We need apps inside our body that are communicating with our brain and telling us what's going wrong if there is a certain illness coming up, or our cells maybe mutating in disadvantageous ways. When we're fertile, when we're going through different moods of maybe depression or anxiety. So we need to be more aware of our body, this vehicle that our awareness is located in. My own work with Primo Post Human, which has now become a platform, diverse bodies and autonomous bodies, is to look at building whole body prosthetics as an alternative to our biology so that we could have semi-biological systems that are largely technologically driven, but do have major sensorial awareness and all the feelings and emotions that we have within our biological system. So it has to mirror that in large part. But the direction that we're really heading is to have whole body prosthetics because our biology just is not good enough. And again, we see more and more people walking around with, artificial hips, veneer teeth, different limbs. And it's not something we desire, to be sure. It's something that we have to replace in order to stay alive and active.
That's a really important point and one I wanted to drill in on. Because by now, some people listening are probably thinking, well, that sounds unappealing. You know, put my brain in a toaster oven and then the toaster oven's my body is kind of the downside image of that. But you're saying it's better than dying. You're not saying it's better than whatever you have now.
Well, it's better than dying. I'm sure someone who is in a wheelchair, and I have many friends who are paralyzed in wheelchairs, would rather be alive in their wheelchair than dead. That Stephen Hawking, exemplar scientist, is happy to be alive, even though he has ALS, and it's pretty bad. He can only communicate through an artificial voice, a computerized dictation. So, who are we to say when someone ought to die just because they lose a limb or have a very difficult and untimely disease? So people want to stay alive as long as they possibly can, as long as they have a hope for life or a desire to produce or, feel loved or, want to give love. Those are our human natural instincts that we need to protect. But I think that a whole body prosthetic could possibly be, and let's use the term better because that's the term you use, could be better than biology in that it could be more durable, more flexible, more sustainable, longer lasting, less trouble, less disease, not so many issues with having, to constantly be monitoring our bodies, our temperature, our viruses, bacteria that infiltrate our body. Now, I want to make a caveat here. It's true that our computers get viruses and we're constantly having to protect our computers. So it's very obvious to me that if we did have a whole body prosthetic that was technologically driven, that mirrors our biological system in large part, that we would have to have very smart hacking systems to make sure that we are responsible for our bodies, that we would know how to hack it ourselves and also be aware of who else might hack it. So we become experts in protecting ourselves. But I think that's the wave of the future, no matter if we're a biological species or a semi-biological species or, a post-human species, that we will and we need to become more responsible about our own lives and cherishing and protecting and nurturing our lives.
It's a really interesting trade-off. If you look at the environmental effects of eating, just the systems impact of that, it's enormous. Like, we've basically done some pretty amazing things to the soil, not necessarily good amazing things, to the soil on the planet, and we spend so much energy gathering food. And if you were solar powered and you had essentially a non-biological body, you could do some very, very different things that would be less impactful than what you're doing now. It's kind of like, way beyond I ate everything local to, I didn't eat anything, and I changed my, my power pack every 5 years, and I recycled the one I changed out. Like, it's incredibly futuristic, though. It sounds like something that might happen in 1,000 years, but there's the rate of technology change. And I know, as a futurist, that it's really hard to say, well, when's it going to happen? And you've got guys like Ray Kurzweil who will say 2087 is when the singularity happens. there's so many things that need to happen here, and there's so much strife on the planet. You've got, people starving and wars and major issues around just getting enough food into people. If you were to lay odds as a futurist as to how likely is the vision that you're painting here to happen at all, and how likely is it to happen within 50 years? What are your percentage of odds that you'd lay down on that?
It depends on specifically what we're referring to. If it is life extension and living beyond the human biological limitation of, say, approximately 122 years, or is it whole body prosthetics?
Whole body prosthetics. I think we've got the 120 years in the bag. Like, that's going to happen before I'm 120. I'm actually not so worried about it, if you have enough money.
And then in our society, we drive the price down, and that's something that we do, and it's a proven fact. So the have-nots will be the haves. So I think that eventually, and the gap in the prices coming down gets shorter and shorter all the time. So I think there'll be a fair amount of abundance for everyone, as long as there are no heavy regulations and restrictions by bullies, whatever card they're carrying, Anyway, so I think that what we want to do is make everything available to everyone. No one should be left behind in any scenario about the future. So now let me answer your question. There has to be a level of understanding about scientific and technological advancement. In order to have a whole body prosthetic, you have to have a person. And personhood is the philosophical term for a continuation of identity over time. You are who you were yesterday. We're here right now. Okay, that's me again now. Another second, this is me again now. So, and tomorrow I'll be me then. So it's this continuity of our identity which forms personhood. So that's who we are. And we can change certainly our nature, our behaviors, our values, whatnot over time, but we still continue because our who we are now is based on our memories and our experiences of who we were a moment ago. So in that regard, the continuation of personhood, well, then we would say, who is person? Where is it located? Well, for many of us who look at life extension, we consider, or I should just speak for myself, I consider personhood to be located in the brain. Now, if the brain is where our cognitive properties are located and our thinking apparatus take action and our awareness is designated, including our memories and our emotions and our feedback, then in the brain is what we would call the location or the environment of personhood. It's who we are. So within that environment, too, we have something called consciousness, perception, awareness, whatever term one wants to use, our mind. And we still don't know exactly what consciousness is. People have been studying it for eons, and very brilliant minds have been studying it, and there's still no definitive answer to it. But let's just suppose if mind is located with personhood in the brain somehow, including outside systems that we cannot identify because we have limited perceptions, just as giving a slight open window or door to that opportunity or possibility. With all this in mind, then it seems to me the most important issue here is to back up the brain, because you just can't have a whole body prosthetic without a person in it. So we would need first, before we have whole body prosthetics as an alternative to a biological body or in addition to a biological body, we need to back up the brain. There is a lot of research and study being done in neuroscience and cognitive science and computer science about this, including psychology and design and a number of different fields. Ethics is deeply involved in it. So we don't have the hardware yet, but if we look at slicing the brain and identifying those neurological systems, the neural network, and understanding the synapses of the dendrites and axons and neurons and every bit of information that goes on, which is like a forest of complexity. Once we can copy that or transport, then we can have full body prosthetics, but not until then.
Are you at all concerned that when you copy that, you're going to find out consciousness isn't just in the brain?
Would I be surprised or alarmed?
Exactly. How certain are you that consciousness is in the brain? Because you just said we don't really know the definition of consciousness, but you feel like it's in the brain. My work tells me that there's a gut brain, there's a heart brain, there's probably some distributed nervous system intelligence, and then there's a thinking prefrontal cortex, and there's a midbrain, and there's probably some parts of the brain that you don't need if you don't have a body. But I would hesitate to say my consciousness is only in my brain because A, I don't know what consciousness is, and B, it looks like there's some stuff that happens outside the brain that has a profound effect. It's a big gamble for all the things you're saying.
I didn't say consciousness is located in the brain. Let me go back a second. I was talking about personhood that the continuity of identity, of the diachronic self, is who we are moment to moment to moment. So we need that continuity to form personhood. So if that personhood is based on our memories, our emotions, our perceptions, our awareness, and all we know at this moment is those are located in certain areas of the brain that we can identify through watching neurological processes when, someone's with heavy duty scanning, really smart technology, and also dying neurons and taking a look at the spikes and whatnot. So we know that there's a lot of activity in the brain as an electrical circuit. I also said we don't know what consciousness is, but let's just say for the time being, if we know that personhood is located somewhere in the brain because of memory and perception and thinking and cognitive abilities, intelligence and creativity, then that's what we've got. So we need to back that up. I also said I wanted to leave a door open or a window open that outside the brain, there are elements in the universe, in our surrounding, that we cannot see, hear, perceive because we have limited sensorial makeup, where, for example, my dog can smell things I can't smell. It's amazing. Or the cat can hear things I can't hear. You know, there's all sorts of a variety of really amazing senses other animals and insects have that we don't have. So, and we also know that we can't see all the light rays from the sun. We can only see a certain spectrum. So there is a possibility that there's something around us that we can't see. I agree with you in great detail about the, I would call it the connective consciousness or the connectome around us. You know, Sebastian Siang talks about the connectome in the body, the brain, and the central nervous system, and every part of us being connected. Well, of course, that makes sense. We couldn't exist without that. But if we look at the larger picture here on a more gestalt platform, we are all buzzing around together. And I think that's one of the most interesting metaphors of the internet. I mean, it's made us almost see that we're, you know, these data systems communicating constantly with each other, and sometimes a little bit too much, too many tweets that we don't want to see or listen to. You know, some people should just stop tweeting. But yeah, I agree with you that there's different levels of consciousness. In fact, there's a consciousness conference every year at University of Arizona, and I'll be going to it next year. So that's exciting. But it's a topic that we could talk about forever, and we'll find ways that we agree and ways that we don't agree. And a lot of it is driven by a person's instincts, by a person's value system, morals, and also religion. Yeah. Political views. So, you know, everyone has a somewhat different perception on it. So it's a tough nut to crack.
One of the concerns that I have is that there's a remarkably cool study looking at heart rate variability. And when a person walks into a stall of a horse that's trained to ride, the horse's heart rate variability will, within seconds, change to match the heart rate variability of the rider without touch. So this is probably in the EM spectrum. In fact, that's what the guys who discovered this are theorizing. And it's something that you can replicate. And that's why people who are afraid of horses generally get thrown off horses, and people who are calm on a horse can ride it. Now, if the horse is a wild horse, it doesn't work. But the process of taming the horse does that. Now, if I put on my robot body with my brain either uploaded or just my brain in it, I wonder if we would lose that kind of connection. And I also believe, based on some other data, quantified self-style data, around the idea that my heart rate variability will affect yours if we're in the same room together. It's a subtle effect, but it's a little bit spooky because I feel like there's a whole bunch of data we haven't gathered yet around human interaction on spectrums that are hard for us to see with our eyes or to detect with relatively primitive instruments. So until we map out that interaction, I'm hesitant to, you know, upgrade parts of my body. And I wonder if some of, you know, Cheney's great evil, or is it Rumsfeld, comes from the fact that, you know, he's got an artificial heart that doesn't even have a heartbeat. You know, it's a constant pump sort of thing. I don't know. But I feel like there's stuff going on in here that affects what's going on up here. And we've got data about the number of nerves going each way and all that. So this is a slippery slope, and I wouldn't want to do something that would make me less human, but I certainly would want to upgrade the systems of my body to every extent they can. And I want to see every spectrum of, you know, infrared and x-ray with these eyes or some other eye, and I'm happy to mount it here or here. So it's a very interesting future to imagine, but I'm not sure that we have enough data about where we are today in order to map that future out effectively. Do you have any thoughts on where research should go over the next 10 years in order for us to know more about the body in order to be able to upgrade it?
Sure, but I'd like to make just a quick comment on what you were saying. You know, it's interesting. When I lived in Telluride, Colorado, which is a ski resort 8,750 feet in the mountains, surrounded on three sides by 14-foot mountains, I lived there for many years. And I had a different sensorial perception than I had when I moved to Los Angeles, when I had left Telluride, closed down my businesses and everything so I could work in the film industry in LA. And it was very abrasive to my system. I felt I was in a river of metal, and the constant sound of cars and metal was very unnerving to me. So it was something I had to work on a daily basis so it wouldn't affect my physiology. So the environments we surround ourselves in do affect us. The people we surround ourselves with do affect us. If we're with people that are negative or hostile or trying to hurt you, you will be pretty unhappy and uncomfortable if you have any level of perception or intuition. Likewise, if you're around people who are joyous and enjoy your company and are very positive, it'll, you know, wear off on you. So it's always play tennis with someone who's better than you, as my father used to say. Now, about horses and animals, I think that there is something there about getting in sync with other life forms. I certainly feel that way about my gardens, my roses, and my plantings. I feel that way about aesthetics in an environment very much as far as design and color and shape and form. And sound means a lot to me too. I can walk in a room and pick up on a certain angular sharpness that makes me uncomfortable, and I'll walk out of the room and just leave because I don't think it's healthy. And many people are like that. We're very sensitive. We're very, or maybe even a little bit too much to the environment. Other people don't even notice a thing. So by that, what I'm saying is each person has a different physiology. Even though we're one species, we all are different based on so many variables, upbringing, you know, learning, aptitude, any variable that even from early childhood to latest situation of a near-death experience or a loss of a love or a divorce or, you know, job, career difficulty can affect us in so many different ways. The issue about a whole body prosthetic is that we wouldn't want one in this time, in linear time, in the biosphere that didn't mirror biology. As far as being in a non-linear time space, like in a cybernetic system, for example, the cybersphere, we would not need the same type of body that we would need in this environment. We need a different set of sensorial capabilities. So to exist in this biosphere that we're in, and this biological landscape, a whole body prosthetic would necessarily need similar and advanced capabilities in biology, or we simply would be extremely uncomfortable.
That is awesome thinking. So yeah, if we're going to go into space and live on a spaceship for 10 generations, you need a different body. Amen to that. I wouldn't want to be this bag of meat floating in space for a long time. That's just bad news. It's probably bad for the space environment too. These little bits of humans everywhere. Yuck.
Oh, well said.
So let's zoom in from the far future, which is fascinating. I love this. And talk about some things that I know that listeners are going to want to know, being that you're a transhumanist. Do you take supplements?
Oh, yes, I do. But I'm not someone who downs them. I don't think it's healthy for the body to stuff supplements in your mouth, mainly because it puts too much pressure on our digestive system. I take the supplements that I believe I need, vitamin D, because I don't go out in the sun anymore because I had skin cancer. So I only run through the sun. So I need the vitamin D. Fish oil, I think, because when you're aging, you lose collagen and elasticity in your skin, and you your nails become more brittle and your hair becomes more coarse. So that helps lubricate the body. Vitamin C is always good, but I prefer it from fruits rather than taking vitamin C. I take hormone replacement therapy, and I have since my late 40s. I truly think it's one of the smartest things women can do, but I think it has to be bioidentical transdermal, which means transdermal on the skin. Estradiol, you can have a little testosterone in there or not, but we've found out that testosterone can cause hair loss in women as well as men. So you might want to steer clear of that testosterone. It produces, with the body, it produces a hormone on the scalp, which causes hair damage. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And then I take, let's see what else. That's about it, basically. I'm pretty much a purist in that sense. I'm someone who likes to get out and hike. And you know, do sports and be in the environment, working in the garden, and I'm pretty much a naturalist in that sense. As far as intervening with aging, of course, cosmetic surgery is very important, but not to do major facelift. You know, all this augmentation that so many people do, puffing up the lips and, you know, Madonna face. You don't want to have this rubbery plastic face. I think wrinkles and lines are beautiful, and you know, just keep healthy. That's the main thing. Whitening the teeth is, I think, really important. that's one of the first signs of aging. And so, you know, be healthy and teeth and, you know, fresh and smell good and all that kind of stuff. But as far as supplements, I did, when I was doing a lot of working at the gym with muscles, I lost 10 pounds of muscle mass, I believe, or maybe 8 pounds, because I don't work out as hard as I used to. I just, it's too much effort. But I used to take some, you know, not steroids, but a certain creatine to help with the ACT and building muscle. I don't do that now, but I do the protein drinks before going to the gym. And I still work out a lot and I have muscles, but not to the level I used to. I don't think it's so necessary.
There are some interesting studies that show for people over 30, creatine increases IQ. Do you do other things to increase your intelligence versus just take supplements and be healthy?
Yes, I do. In fact, that's something I've devoted the past 8 years to. I tried doing the crossword puzzles. I'm lousy at them. I watched, you know, different TV shows like Jeopardy and all that. I'm not good at that either. Dancing is great because you're crossing over the body. Yeah. It's very good for helping increase the plasticity of the brain. So dancing is fabulous. Yoga is fabulous. And what I truly support more than anything is going back to school, learning a new skill. So I've pretty much worked in that area because if you stay in your own field, it doesn't really help. I mean, it's like a padding. It's almost like a placebo. But if you go in an area that you have no cognitive skills in, then you really are working those the plasticity and building new neural pathways. So I think that's really important to do. Another thing is humor. You know, comedians are really brilliant, you know, at good comedians. So I think humor and no. Right, exactly. Metaphors, symbols, yeah. you're very funny.
Thank you. I say that I'm just kidding. Joe Rogan's become a friend who's a famous comedian, and he's an awesome guy who thinks really deep thoughts too. And I agree with you. Actually, comedians are incredibly valuable people who think about the world differently. And I'm happy to know a few of them now and go, wow, these guys are super cool.
yeah, exactly.
Now, let's talk sleep. So, you know, Do Androids Dream? It was the name of a science fiction novel, I believe. And now, do you reduce your sleep because when you're sleeping, you're not alive?
No, I love sleep. I love it. One of my favorite things is to have clean sheets. I only use white sheets and white towels. I love clean sheets and to climb in the bed. And I feel so comfortable in those clean sheets and to go to sleep. I love it. I just love sleeping. I love dreaming. I usually have good ones. Sometimes I have strange dreams, but usually they're quite good. I'm not someone who wants to lengthen my life by knocking myself out, staying up. but my creativity comes in waves. I'm a morning person, so I love getting up in the morning and getting work done, but I'm also a night person. So that's the tension, the struggle I constantly have to wrestle with.
So how many hours of sleep per night do you normally get?
I'm pretty basic. I get usual 8 hours sleep.
8 hours. Very cool. I'm starting to ask that question of guests on the show. I've done a lot of sleep hacking to improve the quality of my sleep so I can get the same amount of rest and recovery in less time, because I feel like if I can free up 3 hours a day without incurring a biological or cognitive or creativity cost, it's totally a good investment. But it definitely, you know, there you can burn yourself out that way. So it's always interesting to ask people with unusual minds like yours what their practice around sleep is. So thank you for
Do you take naps? Do you take naps?
Not usually. I've gotten my brain to the state where I can just go all day and I feel good and I'm turned on. And sometimes I'll have meetings where I'm talking the entire meeting for 8 or 10 hours straight after landing in the morning, and I can do it and I'm okay. And so I believe there's a certain amount of training in the nervous system that comes. And I've talked with soldiers who improve their sleep dramatically, and sleep experts who talk about, yeah, you can train yourself to have efficient sleep. So it's just interesting because it's a transhuman idea to be able to control and to select how much sleep you'd like to be able to get and to perform at the level you choose, regardless of that. And so it's really interesting to hear your take as, you know, one of the leaders in transhumanism. And I like your answer perfectly well. It's not a good or a bad thing to sleep more or less. It's just, you know, how much
whatever makes you feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I love sleeping. I know, love my dog being in the room or even on the bed. I need a blackout. I have blackout curtains in the bedroom.
So important, yes.
Oh, so important. I have a sound soother on the bed, and I love the sound of rain. It's very calming for me. And I prefer it if my husband goes to sleep at the same time I do, but he likes to stay up and read. So we've recently just moved a very comfortable chair in the bedroom for him so he can read in the bedroom because I feel more comfortable. It's like family in the room. I want everyone in there and then I sleep more soundly.
That is so interesting to hear the perspective, like your specific perspective on that. I love it. Thank you. Wow, that's such a great avenue for discussion because these are all, you know, you're a gardener. You connect well with your plants. You introduced me to your dog on Skype before we started the recorder, right? So you've got this very warm sort of human side to you, yet some of what you talk about, transhumanism, is thought about, at least in some camps, as being the polar opposite of that. What do you say to someone who says, this is evil, like you're removing the humanity from humans and things like that? Because my take on you is you're not evil. You're curious and interesting and you're doing really good thinking. So like what's, how can there be this dark side of what you're talking about and the light side? What do you say to those people?
I try to be empathic. I try to understand what drives them to feel the way they do. And it's fundamentalist. We don't like change. Humans, by and large, don't like change. We like to find our little niche and then, you know, put all, like George Carlin said, put all of our stuff, and we like to have all of our stuff there. And then this is my stuff, and put our sign outside the door. You know, this is my religion. This is my politics. This is my family. This is who I am. You know, this is how I like to have relationships. This is my gender. You know.
Oh, like Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like we like to, exactly. But in my world, I'm a natural explorer. I've always been challenging the edge. I never felt comfortable with one set practice or one rule. And frankly, I grew up in a time where, you know, there's a lot of misogyny and I have three brothers and my parents, you know, and I love my parents. And my mother has been one of my key supporters. My father passed away, but growing up, it was a man's world. Men went to university. Men were the doctors, the lawyers, the preacher. And I remember at church one day at 18, I just got up and walked out. I thought, I never want a man telling me what to do again, what my moral compass should be. I need to know for myself if I'm a valued person. And then I started noticing in universities, male professors competing with me, and I would win awards, and it was just so uncomfortable. And it made me realize that there's this identity issue of not just gender, but racism, bigotry, this type of world where you're supposed to be someone and that's who you are. So I'm a very strong supporter of human rights, multiplicity, and diversity. Just from firsthand experience, a lot of the issues too that make me love the idea of human enhancement is when I was a teenager, I spent considerable time helping children in need, and I worked in the hospital, and I also worked at an area called Home for Incurables, where people were so physically deformed that they were not allowed in public. If you can believe that, it would be outlawed today, but it was a place called the Home for Incurables. And I would go do Christmas parties there and take gifts, and it taught me early on that there's this broad spectrum of what a human is. There are people with massive deformities or mental illnesses, and they still deserve to be understood in whatever way they can. So I have a background in a broad background in a lot of experiences, and then my own personal experiences, of course. You know, you go through your trials and tribulations in life. But when I talk to people and they come down and say, well, and it's happened to me many times, especially in Europe, you know, what are your ethics and you know, eugenics and you want to control the world? And I listen. And then I try to say, well, how long do you want to live? You know, do you want to have children? They go, yes. But do you want to see your children's children? Yes. Do you want to maybe have another career someday, something you really love? What do you love to do? Well, I'd love to be an attorney. I'd love to be a painter. Well, what if you had time to do that? And before you know it, most people are 150 years old and they're happy talking about what they'd love to do. And if you talk to them about someone that they know that has a terrible disease or a paralysis or an injury, and you ask them if you could help them and give them a robotic arm or, you know, go in and engineer their body so that this cancer could come out, would you do it? And one-on-one people say yes. So individually, we all want to be loved and love and share life and find peace of mind. You know, it doesn't come easy. But as a society and a group, we become more bigoted and judgmental and I'm right, you're wrong. And that's in politics and it's in religion and it's in lots of groups. So I that stands out to me and I try to understand it. It's difficult, but I do my best. And I've had lots of years experience dealing with people when I'm on stage, you know, getting angry at me. And I've had to learn just to try, just listen and don't argue back, just state my case and leave it at that. I did have a TV show in LA for, I think, about 7 years called Trans Century Update on the Future in the 1980s. And I think I ended it in 1993. And that was great. It got me elected to the Green Party. I ran on the Green Party ticket, if you can believe it. Anti-technology. Wow. And I won the election in Santa Monica, you know, West LA. I got the most votes and I lasted for a year. My platform was we can use technology to solve some of the environmental problems and we definitely can. So, but moving forward, I try to listen and it gets annoying, I have to tell you, and it gets frustrating when I'll emphasize ethics. I'll emphasize, you know, I'll emphasize even the flaws I see in transhumanism and my own views. And I still have people not even listening to a word I say and go, it's only for the rich or, you know, it's a selfish thing to do. And what about overpopulation? And I explain it over and over. So I think it just takes time. And I think it's going to be more of a cultural shift, frankly, just like we've seen with quantified self. I think it is the quintessential example of people just doing a transhumanist act and not even aware of it. They're doing what is so fundamental to transhumanism, self-responsibility, being innovative and developing an understanding of their lives. You know, it's pretty exciting. Just
ordering your own lab tests because you can, because you want the data, not because you think you might be sick. It's such a thing that most people have never done.
It's something
for me that's, well, I guess, going on. Yeah, 10 plus years I've been doing that, and I can't imagine not doing it any more than like changing the oil in my car. But it is very much a mindset thing, and you should, in my opinion, keep on doing what you're doing to get people thinking about this and where it leads, because it's important and it'll go there anyway. If we don't think about it, we just won't like where it ends up.
Yeah. We need to just keep on going, and I think that there, of course, in every group, there's the extremists who, you know, are a little bit forceful. We see it with the Republicans, the Democrats, the Christians, the Jews, the Muslims. Every group has, and we see it with the postmodernists. There's many postmodernists who are, you know, demonstrative about their postmodernist views. And I always say, what solutions do you have? Yes, you can counter the Enlightenment, modernism. You can get mad at universal natural truths, you can get mad at all this stuff and help restructure it. And I like that, getting away with this strong scientism and universal norms. I think that's been very bad for humanity because it defies individuality and diversity. But on the other hand, when I say to postmodernists, what are you contributing? How are you helping the situation we're facing right now with some of the issues with people not having enough clean water or housing or the wars, for goodness sake, and the abuse to women? There's no answers. So I think transhumanism, at least, if it does anything good, besides being a proponent of life extension and healthy life for everyone, is that to break through people sitting on couches not doing anything. Transhumanists, by and large, are very proactive. They're doers. So I think it's endemic, just like quantified selfers. They're doers. I mean, they're, you know, and the thing about quantified self that's so fabulous, you don't have to be a technologist. You don't have to be a programmer. You can write it in pencil and it's okay. And I love that. I think that's a really generous of spirit.
We're running out of time on this interview.
So I'll hold up my book.
That was the question. There's two questions for you. Number one is actually the last question is normally, how do we learn more about you? But hold up your book and give us your URL. And this will be in our show notes as well. So
can you see it?
Yes, it's very readable. It says The Transhumanist Reader, Classical and Contemporary Essays on the Science, Technology, and Philosophy of the Human Future. And what's your URL?
Mine is natasha.cc. Cool. Just www.natasha.cc. I am building a new network. It's going to be the Transhumanist Knowledge and Media Center. It'll be separate from Humanity Plus and all other organizations. It's not going to be an organization. It's going to be a network, an information center. And it's going to be based in large part on the book, because there's so many fabulous thinkers in this book. It's an anthology. It's not a novel. So have all that work there, all the ideas about transhumanism and life extension, human enhancement. I'd love to have your work included on it because it's so important. So I'm looking at becoming more of a knowledge base, a library of knowledge, and also a media center. So anyone who has any questions about transhumanism, human enhancement, life extension, et cetera, can go there. And what we want to do is connect people and make sure that people are connected at the level of their knowledge and experience and, you know, what the user wants, who can deliver for it, if we want to speak in that language.
Then wow, that's a big mission. That's exciting, yeah. And I'd love to support it.
Thank you. I'd love for you too. I think that you certainly provide a creative, intelligent level of comprehension about the future and the human, as far as not just health and physicality, but also questioning and pondering and opening an avenue to not be judgmental, to keep asking questions. And that's what we all have to do. So thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for the compliment. The final question, and this is something that every guest has always answered, is what are your top three recommendations for people? This doesn't have to be from your transhuman experience, just from your entire life lived. If someone wants to perform better, kick more ass, and live the ultimate life, what are the three most important things they should focus on from your experience?
First, be honest with yourself and know where you excel and where you fall behind. And everyone's different. There is room enough for everyone. So just figure out where you do well and where you don't, and just accept that. Don't have to elbow other people out. There's plenty of room for everyone to have their own personality and career and mission. I think that's very important. Number two is surround yourself with people who admire you and value you and give that back to them. And number three is random acts of kindness and senseless acts of beauty, I think, is a way of life. It certainly is. It's kind of like paying it forward. So those are my three recommendations.
Thank you for sharing those. Natasha Vitamore, I really appreciate being on the show today. It's been awesome talking with you, and thanks for all the work you're doing.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.